south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
People have been asking my opinion on this Middle East war thing. I haven't said a thing on this show anyway, up till now. Funny thing, I've got some Jewish buddies, you know. What a cliche, huh? Some of my best friends are Jews. Well, that happens to be correct. Oddly enough, until I moved to Latin America, I only knew two Jews in my whole life. Hey, I mean, look, I come from a white bread, sort of a German-Italian-Polish neighborhood in Chicago, where, in fact, I never saw a black kid walk through my neighborhood till I was probably a senior in high school. And of course, you longtime listeners have heard me say I went to Catholic school, so there weren't any Latinos or black people in my school. I know it's different now, but back then, of course, they could have gone, but you know, a Catholic school is a private school and you got to pay tuition. So I guess most Latino and black parents couldn't afford to send their kids to private school, or maybe some other reason, like possibly their neighborhoods were too far away from the school. Who knows? Back then, they didn't have children's school buses. You had to take public transportation or maybe have your parents drive you there. Oh, and believe it or not, I never saw a single Latino kid in my neighborhood either. In fact, the first Latino guy that ever came into my neighborhood, I brought him in because I was giving him guitar lessons. He became a really good friend of mine, Johnny Gonzalez. Nickname Taco. And guess what? He didn't mind that name at all. Though I'll never forget the first time I brought him into the neighborhood and into my house. My mother did say after he left, "Where'd you meet him?" The thing is, you know, my parents never exhibited any kind of prejudice, bigotry, or racism. My mother, being a teacher, a professor, she wouldn't have it any other way. My mother's question then, "Where'd you meet him?" was strictly out of curiosity. Back then, parents wanted to know what kind of kids you were hanging out with. Same thing happened when I brought my first black friend home. Name was Gary Reese. Once again, my mother said when he left, "Where'd you meet him?" Now, my 100% German grandma on my mother's side was a different case altogether. I remember when I was a little kid, she had a crew of Mexicans working at her big farm north of Chicago. I remember she wasn't at all racist or bigoted against them, but I remember her using the N-word once in a while. Specifically, I remember her saying something like, "You know, today I went shopping and some nice blank lady waited on me." And I remember my mother scolding her saying, "Mom, don't use that word." But she did once in a while, but not disparagingly. It just kind of came out of her mouth. In every other way, she was a good, kind Christian lady. But she was born in 1888. So she'd use the N-word once in a while. And every time my mother would scold her. Now, I wonder what she would say if she heard how that word gets used 900 times in every rap song and every single Hollywood movie where you've got two black guys talking to each other. I'm sure Grandma would not understand, no matter how much you might try to explain it. Hell, I don't get it myself. Anyway, like I said, I only met and became really good friends with some Jewish guys and gals when I came down here to Latin America. Though I had one Jewish buddy who was in my band for some months. He played horn. Way back when I lived in Chicago, back in high school, he played a mean trumpet. Nice guy, super quiet, super studious too. But we never really hung out. So I never really got to know him. But we used to have band practice in his basement. So I got to meet his family and stuff. He had two older brothers, really nice guys. Kind of wonder what became of them. And of course, when I was in engineering school in the electronics lab, there was a Jewish guy, the second Jewish guy I ever got to know. He had his lab set up right next to mine. His name was Simon Cohen. Also a really nice guy, but we never hung out, so I really didn't get to know him outside of school. Except, you know, doing projects in the lab. So I was pretty much clueless about the Jews, the Middle East, the Palestinians, the conflicts there. In a way, just too far removed from my Midwest consciousness, you know? So I never gave the Jewish thing much thought. Then, right around the year 2000, when I started doing my syndicated radio show in Latin America, you might have heard me mention this. For 2 hours every morning, I was the morning gringo drive-by guy in a number of Latin American big city radio markets. And in fact, it was called the Chi-Town Johnny DUI Show. driving under the influence of Johnny. In fact, it was the only English syndicated sort of crazy DJ morning radio show of the kind you had up in the States. At the time, it was the only show of its kind in Latin America, so lots and lots of gringos and expats listened in. You know, way back when, before the internet hit? So right off the bat, I'd open up the phone lines and I'd get plenty of calls. Mostly from American gringo expats living and working in Latin America, including gringo expats and gringo military guys working at the embassies. You see, they missed listening to their crazy morning DJs up in the States, so that's why they tuned into me. Remember, this was before internet streaming here in Latin America. So I gave them a little taste of the morning radio they were missing back home. Remember, there's lots of lag time down here. That ubiquitous streaming stuff didn't come in till maybe 2008, 2010, whereas you guys in the first world started getting it probably in the late 1990s. Anyway, for approximately 8 years, 2000 to 2008, I had open lines on my show and I was getting all kinds of expats calling in. And a nice contingent of those listeners were guys from New York who were down in Latin America owning and operating clothing maquilas, you know, so-called sweatshops, almost all of them Jewish. Now, I used to give out a lot of prizes on that show. Hotel nights, dinners, cases of Heineken, Gold's gym memberships, dinners at Hooters. Because all those guys were my patrocinadores, my sponsors. In Spanish, if you have a show, TV, radio, whatever, your sponsor is a patrocinador. The root word there being patron or patron, patrocinador. I had Hooters, Heineken, Gold's Gym, Harley Davidson, and a bunch of restaurants as my patrocinadores. And every day I'd have an on-air quiz and give away something. And that's how I met so many of those Jewish guys from New York. They'd call in and win, and you had to come down to the station to pick up your voucher. And a lot of times when they'd come and pick that stuff up, it would be when the show was over, and they'd ask the secretary if they could meet me. And I'd meet him, and we'd have a coffee or something at the cafeteria. I got to know a bunch of them that way. And then some of those guys who were repeat winners started inviting me to various events and parties and stuff. I'd meet their girlfriends, their wives, their kids. In time, I became pretty good friends with them. They started inviting me to all their gigs. I got invited to weddings and quinceañeros parties, bar mitzvahs, bat mitzvahs, their houses, their beach houses. And through them, I sort of got the inside scoop on the whole Jewish community living in and around Latin America. There are some real movers and shakers down here. One of the things that really struck me early on about them was that these guys from New York, pure American New Yorkers, right? They had Latina wives and girlfriends. But these Latinas were Jewish Latinas. And I mean, they looked pure Latina, but they were Jewish. You know, observe the Sabbath and the rituals, go to temple. I found out, though, how that happened was many generations ago, some guy came over from Israel or Russia or the States, married a Latina, she converted to Judaism, and so it began. They've all got some white European or American Jewish blood in the family tree. Oh, and this might shock you. Two or three of those guys, when they introduced me around, they'd say, hey, did you meet my friend Johnny? He's a Nazi. Because they knew I was a gringo, but 100% of German extraction. They used to laugh their asses off about it, too. No subject was taboo with those guys. A lot of them were really sharp with the comebacks and a lot of fun. So anyway, I'm still keeping in touch with some of those guys. And I talked to a few of them lately concerning Israel and Palestine. And they're all really shook up about it. Along the way, I learned two things. One is, you probably heard that most Jewish people are liberal Democrats up in the States, right? Well, that's changing a lot for two reasons. Reasons I never figured on. The Democrats are an anti-gun party. They're always trying to restrict and restrict and restrict, ultimately ban guns in the States, right? Well, guess what my Jewish buddies are telling me? There's a huge but not much spoken about trend in Jewish families up in the States. They're taking shooting courses and arming themselves. All of a sudden, they love the Second Amendment because they're seeing what's happening around the world now. That Jewish people, again, are becoming the targets of Muslim anger and atrocities. They're telling me their Jewish friends and family are not taking this lightly. They're going to defend themselves. And with the Democrat aversion to the Second Amendment, well, guess what? As much as they might even hate a guy like Trump, protecting themselves and their families is more important than anything they might have against him. All right, that's number one. And number two, my Jewish buddies here in Latin America are telling me they're extremely pissed at the Democrats and the Biden administration for permitting that open border between the U.S. and Mexico. They've all heard the stories that a certain percentage of the people getting through are not Latinos at all, but Arab Muslims. Last count, more than 100 picked up that are on the Muslim terrorist watch list. And my Jewish bloodies firmly believe the clock's ticking on another big terrorist event or a series of terrorist attacks in the States and Canada that can and will be directly linked to the open border policy of the Democrats. So anyway, that's what I'm hearing from my Jewish buddies here in Latin America. And remember, living in Latin America, these guys are acutely aware of that border problem. And though they live in Latin America and feel really safe down here, they're very concerned about their friends and relatives living up in the States and, of course, in the rest of the world. Because as you probably know by now, just this week, crazy-ass Muslim fanatics on social media are urging other Muslims around the world to actively get revenge on the Jews. So anyway, I just thought you might want to hear what my Jewish buddies here in Latin America are saying about the situation. Now, on the same page as that, I'd like to thank our expat buddy Oscar Miner for sending me the following link to a congressional testimony regarding that open border problem. This just went down 2 or 3 days ago. Anyway, Oscar says, "This is one of the most insane things I've ever heard. Only a nation attempting suicide would allow this." Turns out, and I'll send you this link, just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Turns out an app has been created by the U.S. government for illegal aliens to log on and make appointments to enter the country, the U.S., without documents. The following is the congressional testimony on the subject that just went down. Quote, "I'm reading to you from public reports about how your own government app works. You rolled out a new phone app called CBP-1, an app for your cell phone. I've got a picture of it behind me here." Again, me, Johnny here. This is the congressional testimony I'm reading from. It goes on to say, "This phone app allows," and I'm going to quote from your own fact sheet, "it allows," and I quote, "non-U.S. citizens without appropriate documents for admission to schedule an appointment to come to the border." So what does this mean? Illegal immigrants can now go on their phone and schedule a time to come to the border and then be admitted. And then it says, "and you have identified 7 separate border points of entry where they could come in, 5 of them in Texas, 2 of them in California, and 1 in Arizona. It's like a concierge service for illegal immigrants." So, he says in this congressional testimony, "my question is, you don't think the border crisis was bad enough that now we're going to have an app that allows illegals to schedule appointments and come right in and be admitted to this country? Senator, you're mischaracterizing the use of this application." He says, "those arriving for the CBP-1 appointment are given no interviews, asked no questions about vulnerabilities," read red flags, "that they may or may not have listed on that app, or about why they're coming to the United States. They're simply released into the country," end quote. So rather than building a wall, Mr. Secretary, you have built Ticketmaster for illegal immigrants. Again, this new app is like a concierge service for illegal immigrants. All right, me, Johnny here. I'm so glad I live in Latin America. I know if I was living back in the States like my Jewish buddies, I'd be all gunned up. Does that sound racist? Is it racist to want to defend yourself, your family, and your property? Well, I guess in some places you can't do that anymore, like California, New York, Washington, Chicago. You defend yourself and you go to jail. So again, at the risk of sounding like a broken record, the question is, how's your plan be coming? All right, now from the People Are Stupid file comes an article that just came out today from Cuenca, Ecuador. You know, that's International Living's number one hotspot for retiring gringos and expats, right? The title of the article, "Insurance Company Steals Over $7 Million After Promising Investors 9% a Month Returns." Now, let's see. There's no red flags there when someone offers you 9% returns per month, not year, per month. Hey, sign me up. That's only a little more than 100% return per year. Nothing strange about that. Now, let me read a little excerpt from this article now. It says at least 700 individuals have suffered losses from their involvement with BY Accesores de Seguros, a company which raised funds promising returns of up to 9% a month, resulting in a total customer loss of at least minimum $7 million. Take the case of Karina, it says. She initially believed BY Accesores de Seguros to be a reliable investment. They had promotions all over social media. However, now she deeply regrets taking out a loan to invest $11,000 in the company. She is one of 700 investors, including expat gringos, who put their money into this insurance brokerage firm, which was not authorized to solicit funds or offer investment returns. The question is, how would you know that? Oh, and get this, it says, as a result of not having received promised profits nor being able to withdraw their initial investments, around 100 individuals filed a complaint with the Prosecutor General's Office against the insurance company and its manager, Bruno Yenazeli Garado, alleging fraud and unauthorized fund collection. In addition, 600 other injured parties have submitted written complaints. Oh, and it says, by the way, there was a minimum investment requirement of 10 grand, which is why I suppose so many gringos jumped in. Then it says the first official round of complaints were submitted on October 10th, 2023. What, about 2 weeks ago, right? Meanwhile, Immigration and the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Human Mobility, whatever that is, reported that Mr. Yanazeli Garrido left the country for the United States on October 6th, 2023, 4 days before the complaints were filed. Then it says the company's headquarters, located in northern Quito, has been closed since Friday, October 6th, with no employees reporting for duty, and attempts to contact the company's phone numbers redirect you to a recording on an answering machine. By the way, it says the money manager, Ganazelli Garrido, who fled to the United States, previously appeared on television and social media sites discussing investments. It says further investigation of the company's social media sites shows employees had expensive, excessive outings. So then you might ask, when you're investing so much, a $10,000 minimum, wouldn't you ask, how is that 9% a month being generated? Well, according to their social media sites, where most people get their info these days, the company claimed these returns were generated by astute investments in publicly traded companies. Blah, 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 that goes on from there, more of the same. The thing is, anyone with half a brain can see it was a typical boilerplate Ponzi scheme. Come on, they're offering 9% a month, even 5% or 2% a month, is way beyond any kind of normal rate of return in any investment environment. In fact, you've heard me say on this show many times before, there are some outrageous rates of return in real banks and credit units down here. For example, just today I saw an ad for a bank, actually a bunch of banks in Ecuador, offering a 10.25% annual rate of return CD in dollars. And even that, to everyone living up in the United States, seems too good to be true, because you could never get that rate, not even half that rate, in a bank in the States. In fact, down here in Latin America, there are lots and lots of banks and credit unions that offer 10% interest per year, that is, for a CD. And even more, 15, 20, even 25% in their local funny money. The thing is, they have to offer those high rates because their local funny money is even more inflationary than the inflationary U.S. dollar. Anyway, lots of gringos and expats have been sucked in on these high interest rate schemes, like the one just mentioned. But, you know, when gringos and expats get burned like that, they generally shut their mouths. They keep quiet about it. They suffer in silence because they don't want to look like fools in front of their friends. Now, you longtime listeners might remember, probably around a year and a half, 2 years ago now, I told a little story about when I was sitting with my friend, ex-corrupt Boston cop Bob, and a 30-something Latino businessman. The Latino guy was trying to convince Bob and I to put some dough into some kind of investment scheme he was in. He said he put 5 or 10 grand in, I can't remember the number, but he was getting something like 15% interest a month. And I told him, man, I'd never invest in that. You better get your money out right now while you're ahead. And he just laughed and said, are you nuts? I've been cleaning up for 3 months now. I said, you should at least pull out your initial investment. If it goes bust, at least you're even. Surprise, surprise. He said, no, I just roll it over. That way it builds up so much faster. And Boston Bob and I just looked at each other and rolled our eyes. Now, I've seen ex-cop Bob many times since then. Though the other guy, the Latino guy, I haven't seen him since. Bob says he hasn't either. He's wondering what became of him. I was thinking, whatever it is, it can't be good. Oh, by the way, follow up on that last story. The guy that ran to the States with that $7 million was last reportedly seen, guess where? My jammy. Don't you hate when that happens? Oh, and one more thing. I'm looking at this Ecuador news feed. Now, this might not mean much to you at all, but you better pay attention. You guys know I'm always pushing people to get the hell off the grid, you know, get independent, as much as you can anyway. It's not hard. You can take baby steps. There are lots of ways to do that. For one, purify your own water and have your own water supply or secondary water supply anyway. You know, no matter where you live, unless you're in a residential tower, you can collect your own rainwater here in Latin America. In fact, when I built my last house in Guatemala, I made it so that the entire roof of the garage was pitched and drained so that all the rainwater, if I wanted it to by pulling a lever, would fill up my 5,000-gallon cistern that I had constructed under the cement garage car slab. And you know what? I always kept that thing filled. 5,000 gallons. Think about it. They say, you know, the average American uses around 100 gallons of water a day or more. That means a 5,000-gallon tank will last the average single person who uses a gluttonous amount like an American 50 days. You longtime listeners might remember that other statistic that the average Latin American uses about 20 to 25 gallons of water a day. Now, we're not talking about poor Latin Americans. We're talking about middle-class Latin Americans. So, if you've got a 5,000-gallon cistern and you use water like the average Latin American, you're good for, what's that, 200 days. Hell, that's more than a half a year. Oh, and by the way, in all that time I was living in that house, 10 years or so, I only tapped in to use that water in that cistern probably 5 or 6 days in 10 years. That's because our subdivision had our own well, our own pozo. We weren't on municipal water, which, as you know, might be only available 8 or 10 or 12 hours a day. Anyway, the point is, once you get down here to Latin America, you should try as much as you can to get self-sufficient. Now, if you rent, it's a little tougher to do because if you do improvements, you'll be improving someone else's land and house. But if you're buying or building, man, that's the way to go. For one, there's so much sun down here in Latin America. If you don't go solar, or at least partially solar, then it's my opinion anyway that you've got half your brain switched off. It's so damn cheap and easy, even for 10 grand. I mean, 10 grand seems like a lot, right? But what if I told you for 10 grand, you could work it so that you'll never have an electric bill again and never pay for gas again either because you'll be able to power an electric car. Better yet, electric cars are getting really cheap now too. Seems like most car companies have a starter model for around 20 to 25K. But you knew that already, right? You've seen EV prices in the news. The point is, I'm looking at this Ecuador news feed, and it says, get this, Ecuador's energy ministry today has declared a national emergency for the country's electrical system, a move that allows it to impose service blackouts if necessary. Say what? They're announcing service blackouts? Well, listen to this. It says the move was required, said the electric ministry, following a decision made by neighboring Colombia, who have decided to reduce electrical power sales to Ecuador. It goes on to say the Colombia Electric Authority notified Ecuador earlier this week they will no longer sell electricity produced in its hydroelectric facilities due to drought conditions. They will only sell Ecuador power from gas and oil generation plants, which will make electricity in Ecuador much more costly. In fact, it says, according to the Electric Corporation of Ecuador, the cost per kilowatt hour will rise from 30 cents a kilowatt hour to 57 cents a kilowatt hour. Did you know that's 3 or 4 times as much as the average American pays for a kilowatt hour of electricity in the U.S.? You've heard me say this before. Electricity is one of the only things, besides imported electronics, that's proportionally way more expensive than what you'd pay for it up in the States. Anyway, the article concludes by saying the government is going to roll out a public information campaign urging citizens to conserve electricity because there will be rolling blackouts. So it says, plan for electric blackouts later this year and in 2024. Are you getting this? Talking about Ecuador now. which is one of the number one expat retirement destinations in the world, according to International Living, right? To me, that just means it's time to start thinking about getting partially, at least, off the grid. You know me, at least you longtime listeners kind of know me. And you know, in a past life, I was an electrical engineer, and that I've had many solar setups myself, and I'm keeping up with the latest and greatest technologies quite religiously. Well, my latest find and my best go-to company for complete solar packages that you can put together yourself if you got a little do-it-yourself or experience, or you could have someone else assemble it for you. Anyway, my go-to company, and it's been that way for a year or so now, is Signature Solar. It's called Signature Solar. Finally, a trustworthy U.S. company that's got complete off-the-grid and on-grid and grid-tie solar packages you can order that are complete. Everything's included in the package. The inverters, the solar panels, the mounting systems, the wiring, lithium battery packs equal or better than Tesla Powerwalls for half, even less than half the price. So for $20,000 or less, you can get the equivalent of a 40 or $50,000 Tesla system that will not only supply 100% of the electricity to your house, even a big house up in the States, and power an electric car as well. The thing is, for the past few years, Tesla Powerwall has been the industry standard, and there have been all kinds of competitors trying to put out the same or better systems. And some of these competitive systems have done just that, at half the price or less. Anyway, that's my go-to company. And if I was putting in a complete solar system today, I know exactly the one I would order from Signature Solar. By the way, they've got complete systems from $5,000 on up, and I mean complete systems, everything's included. Now, once again, I don't make a thing for promoting them. I'm just saying I'm really into it, you know. Solar power and solar power accessories are sort of my hobby, so just trust me on this. By the way, they've even got step-by-step installation videos. So if you order a system, have it delivered, you're handy and want to take a crack at installing it yourself, it's all there and spelled out for you step-by-step. All right, we're getting to the end of the show now. You know, I was talking to expat Eddie the other day. He said, remember that old saying, that cliche, that you are the composite of your five best friends? Kind of scary, huh? Well, I said, Eddie, what if you're like me and you don't have five best friends, only one or two? And even they may not like your company all that much. He said, well, Johnny, in that case, I guess then you're the composite of your five favorite podcasts. Good answer, Eddie. Though that means all you guys and gals out there who religiously listen to this show, well, you're in big trouble.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.